Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
You walk down the street, then as you walk down the street, the guy with the submachine gun demanded me to walk ahead and get in the bushes.
That is Marcus Heard, testifying today in the retrial of Dwayne Moore in the so-called Mattapan Massacre. Heard is the lone survivor of the horrific September 2010 murder of four people, including a two-year-old baby boy and his mother.
The shooting left Heard paralyzed and confined to a wheelchair. And the case first went to court earlier this year, but then the jury acquitted one defendant and remained deadlocked on the other. That man is Dwayne Moore, on trial again now.
Today in court, Marcus Heard described in chilling detail the moment he was shot in the back of the head.
Did you do what you were told?
Yes, sir, I did.
What happened next?
Gunman shot me in the back of the head.
Who shot you in the back of the head?
The gunman with the submachine gun.
Prosecutors allege that Dwayne Moore was that gunman. Moore has not yet taken the stand in this retrial, but he did give an exclusive interview to WBUR. Senior reporter Dolores Handy talked to Moore in Suffolk County Jail and has this report.
Dwayne Moore is on trial again. He faces four counts of first-degree murder. His first trial ended in a hung jury for Moore and an acquittal for his co-defendant, Edward Washington. Moore claims he'd never even met his co-defendant before that first trial.
I first seen Eddie Washington the first day, right before, right as we was beginning for trial, and it was pertinent that we had to come in together and for the last motions. I just knew that they had arrested someone else. I don't know this person that I'm sitting next to, but yet the Commonwealth is spending millions of dollars, at least I know for myself, trying to convict innocent people.
Moore said he did know one of the victims of the so-called Mattapan massacre, Simba Martin. Moore says Martin, whom he calls Sim, befriended him when Moore was staying at a homeless shelter looking for a place of his own. Moore had just completed a 15-year prison term for involuntary manslaughter.
Remember Sim was talking, and I told him that's where I was at. I mean, I really want my own. He said, well, listen, if you can come stay here sometime, too, if you want. You know what I'm saying? You're welcome as my guest. So I took him up on that every now and then.
That man with whom Moore stayed, Simba Martin, was one of the men forced to strip naked that night in Mattapan and then marched out of his home around the corner and shot dead.
This is someone that I really cared about. This is someone that I've talked to conversations of substance with. And then for you to turn around and say because his phone number is inside my phone and because I did try to get in contact with him that night, that this is the reason why I'm responsible for him being murdered. You have the whole entire world, believing that you was responsible for something that you wasn't. That is so heavy. That is literally so heavy.
At the time of the murders, defendant Dwayne Moore was living the next street over from victim Simba Martin and working at the Pine Street Inn. In the first trial and in his retrial so far, prosecutors have not presented forensic or ballistic evidence tying Moore to the murders. The state is linking Moore to the murders based on his cell phone calls in the hours surrounding the murders. And prosecutors are relying on two men who were at the crime scene that night to testify against Moore. One is Kamani Washington, an admitted career criminal who admitted to participating in the robbery, who struck a deal with prosecutors that he would get a sentence of only 16 to 18 years. Another is the shooting victim who survived as a quadriplegic, who on the night of the shootings and in the first trial said he did not know who shot him. Moore insists there is no valid evidence against him and says he did not commit the crime.
I mean, just to the victims' families. If no one else listened, I've I really urge them to listen to the evidence. Listen to the evidence. Don't hate me because of what the come-off is saying. Listen to the evidence. And if the evidence is telling y'all and proving to y'all that I'm the one that did all this stuff, then hate me. I know the evidence doesn't. Nothing points to me. I'm innocent.
Moore, now 35 years old, did not testify in the first trial, and there's no decision yet on whether he'll take the stand in this one. This is what he says when asked, why are you doing this interview?
In light of all the media and the press, everyone's, constantly beating me down. The family members believing the fact that I had something to do with harming their family members. Even in the face of cold, hard evidence that not suggests, but proves otherwise.
Dwayne Moore has been held at the Suffolk County Jail since his arrest in 2010. If convicted of the charges against him, he faces life in prison without the possibility of parole.
That report from WBUR's Dolores Handy. Now, once again, Moore is on trial today for the so-called Mattapan Massacre. The first time this case went to court earlier this year, the jury acquitted one man and returned a hung jury on Moore. Dwayne Moore did not testify in his own defense that time, and as you heard, it's not clear whether he will take the stand in the current retrial. But how does a legal team decide to put a defendant on the stand? Randy Chapman is a legal analyst and attorney at the law firm Chapman & Chapman, and he joins us. Thank you so much, and welcome to Radio Boston.
My pleasure.
First, let me just get your reaction to the fact that Dwayne Moore did give an interview to WBUR. Does that surprise you?
It does. It's very unusual for a defendant, certainly with the knowledge of his defense counsel, to give an interview at all, let alone during the midst of a trial.
Hmm. Well, in that first trial, as no doubt you remember, neighbors, family members of the victims, they were all so outraged when the jury came back with that deadlock on Dwayne Moore to the point where several people had to be removed from the courtroom back in March as the decisions were being read. I mean, this is such a high-profile, emotional case. Can you think of any reason why Dwayne Moore would take the stand this time?
Well, it's really a very, very difficult question for any defendant to decide whether or not he should take the stand. And I think it's important to keep in mind that it is the defendant's decision. Certainly he would look to his lawyer for advice and direction, and oftentimes will defer to the lawyer. But in the final analysis, it's up to the defendant as to whether or not he wishes to testify. And if he feels that the trial requires him to testify in order to possibly establish reasonable doubt, then that may sway him. So if he felt, in that case, I think we had heard that there was possibly an 11-1 for a guilty finding, if he felt as though he would have to testify to make the difference, to sway those other 11 jurors back the other way, then he may decide that it's in his best interest to do so.
Hmm. Now, perhaps courtroom dramas on television have really tainted people's perceptions of what goes on inside real criminal courtrooms. But, you know, on television, we often see sympathetic defendants doing exactly what you're talking about, swaying the jury by telling their own story. I mean, is that a strategy that could be employed by Dwayne Moore's defense?
It's a strategy, but not necessarily a good strategy. In most criminal cases, the defendant will not testify, and very rarely in a murder case will a defendant testify. And there's many reasons for that. The possible garnering of sympathy is one of the least persuasive reasons why a defendant in a murder case would want to testify. A jury, if they believe he did this, killing a baby, they're really going to be disinclined based upon the fact they may think that he's a nice guy to acquit him. The crime itself would belie that. So it really comes down to whether or not a defendant has to testify in order to establish something that he couldn't prove any other way. So in a case where a defendant, for example, may have an alibi, and the only way he can lay the foundation for that alibi would be to testify, he may want to do so if he's the only one that's able to introduce a document that's going to make the difference. But if all he's going to do is get up on the stand and say, I'm a nice guy and I didn't do it, that's not really a good reason, because it gives the government an opportunity to exploit him, to go through their evidence again, to possibly establish that he is incredible in many respects. And so as a consequence, most defendants decline to testify in their own defense, instead resting upon the strong jury instruction by the judge that the jury is not to conclude or draw any inferences from the fact that the defendant did not testify. It is his constitutional right to not testify if he feels he does not wish to do so.
And just as a point of procedure, at what point in time does the defense team have to say whether or not Duane Moore will take the stand?
He doesn't have to make the decision until the moment before they rest their case. The defendant obviously has that constitutional right and can decide up until the close of, basically until the end of their case, to decide if he wants to testify or not testify. Unlike most witnesses where a defense lawyer would have to give notice to the Commonwealth about the name and address and dates of birth of witnesses, a defendant always has that right, and he may make up his mind at the last second to testify, or conversely, may make up his mind to not testify. So usually I tell my clients, we'll decide whether or not you're going to testify when it's time to decide that, whether we need to put you on, because it may or may not make the difference.
Now, a little earlier, you said you were rather surprised that he did speak to WBUR, but, you know, as we heard, Duane Moore did talk to Dolores Handy from Suffolk County Jail, and he said he spoke out because of what he called, quote, cold, hard evidence that he says supports his innocence. I mean, it sounds like he's trying to put forth his defense in the court of public opinion.
Well, that may very well be, but the danger of that is that the court of public opinion is not the one judging him. It's the 12 people sitting in the jury box that are deciding. And statements that he makes now, the recordings of it can be taken by the government and introduced against him. Either if he testifies, they can cross-examine with him if there's something inconsistent about it, or they can try to reopen their case or introduce it in rebuttal evidence to show. And so if he is departs, however slightly, from his earlier version that he told the police with the interview that he's given to you, then it establishes a lack of credibility and is a very dangerous thing for a defendant to do.
Randy Chapman is a legal analyst and a partner at Chapman and Chapman. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Have a good day. Thank you very much.
And still ahead on our program, some outside the Beltway wisdom on how to walk the country back from the edge of the fiscal cliff. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.